Round three. Yeah. So good. I'm glad that you guys are all still here, all in high spirits. It seems a ton of energy in the room, which I love. So we're going to bring out our panelists in just a second, but first a few housekeeping items. So Kevin Kennedy has let me know that tomorrow you guys will all be getting an email from Homestand Sports, I believe. But don't think of it as spam, because it's going to be a discount for an athletic subscription if you feel so inclined. So just take a look and see if you want to indulge in that. And then secondly, this panel, we're going to be doing a Q&A portion as well. So I will be wandering the room. Put your hand up. I'll come and get your question. Feel free to make it as hot takey if you want. But just be warned, last time Doug Smith took issue with one of the questions. And if you were here, he went off. So just be forewarned that, hey, if you're going to give it, you got to be able to take it. So on that note, please welcome our third and final panel of the night, Doug Smith, Paul Jones, and Sherman Hamilton, ladies and gentlemen. All the water for just vodka. That's all that is. Just straight vodka in those water bottles. That's why the panels have been so spicy tonight.
Yeah, I'll take a water.
Could be colorful.
Yeah,
could
Doug wants colorful. Water all of a sudden. Now all of a sudden he's hydrating.
Make my water a double.
Water mixed in with your beer, Smitty?
Oh, and the side.
Welcome back, guys. It's been a minute since we've been up here together, so this is nice.
Thank you.
So earlier today, I broke news to the whole room like a real star.
She's like, whoa.
No.
Like an Ashley bomb.
Yeah, exactly. An A-bomb? Is that a thing? That sounds too much, right?
It's too literal.
Careful with that one.
It's just too literal. Yeah, okay. We'll move on from that. But of course, Kyle Korver headed over to the Utah Jazz in return for 2 second-round picks and Alec Burks, I believe. So
I like Burks.
You like Burks?
I've always liked
him. Because I was saying that if you think you're having a bad day, imagine Burks going to Cleveland. He's like, oh, great.
He's not in Utah.
You think that's worse? Oh, go ahead, please.
You got a chance to win in Utah. You got no chance
to
win in
true.
Cleveland.
That's true.
There's a good casino there.
In Utah?
In Cleveland.
In Cleveland. Really? I hadn't heard that.
I've lost a lot of money there.
I think I got to ask my boy Steve Simmons from The Sun whether he's ever been in that casino.
I think he was sitting at the same table when the money was lost.
No, it's better for, I think, Toronto fans that Kyle Korver went to the Western Conference than the Eastern Conference, but I also think his best before date has expired.
Right.
Yeah. So he's not that much of a factor.
Smitty, I agree. And we were talking about it back there. I think if you're Toronto, you're saying, well, he didn't go to Boston or Philly. And if you're, you know, Indiana, you're saying, well, he didn't go to Philly or Milwaukee. I mean, they're all saying, okay, no one here got him, and it's okay out there.
He's not a difference maker, and he wasn't. I've had a lot of people say, you know, should Toronto try to trade for him? Would he be a great ad for Toronto? He's no better than the 12th guy on the Raptors.
I don't think he gives you. Nothing. I mean, if you look at what Toronto has now, and Sherm, you've always said this, and we've talked about this. They can put a team on the floor defensively that can still score, that's not going to give up anything on the defensive end. If you put Kyle Korver on the floor, you know the days where you got to hide a guy? I think you got to hide him.
I'm more of a fan of Kyle Korver. I think he'll go to Utah and he'll help them.
He's a great fit out there.
Yeah, and a team like Utah that, I mean, the way the Western Conference is situated right now, if Utah makes a couple of moves, they can be a real contender in the West. And I think Kyle Korver, with his shooting ability, he helps them.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to make them better.
Oh, yeah. Even his presence on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think, and yes, his best before date is probably expired.
But
what he can do is play positional defense. He's going to stick to the game plan. He's going to make shots.
And I think if you go through the NBA 20 games in, one of the biggest disappointments are the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to be really good, and they've never been able to make that move from a defensive team to an offensive team the way the league has. And maybe this guy helps them do that.
They've been trying to play faster this year, and all they've been doing really is turning the ball over and giving the opponents more shots. I mean, it's been tough. I mean,
analytically, that's bad.
Sorry,
I didn't throw a number in there, Smitty. My eye test told me that. I actually watched the game, and the spreadsheet didn't tell me that.
Is Blake still here? I don't know. Is Blake still here? We're going to figure it out. But, yeah. You know, Utah's been a big disappointment, I think, in the Western Conference so far. They got beat by, 50 the other night, and then got beat by 32
Dallas,
at home?
Right? Dallas,
yeah.
Dallas?
Dallas. And lost by 38 at home to Indiana. So I think this jazzes them up. I think you like that one?
Did you do that on purpose?
No, I didn't.
Please
actually.
Leave. Get off the stage right now. That was
he's here all week.
Tried to do it on purpose. You mentioned Indiana, and I want you to know if you guys think the Pacers are for real.
Are they
those mirages?
I think they are the team that nobody's talking about.
No one is, no.
I think they're probably fourth or fifth in the East. And they overachieved last year, and I think for them it's about managing expectations. They may not be as good as everybody thinks they are, but you can't throw away last season and expect them to back up and be, you know, people at the beginning of the year weren't maybe giving them enough credit.
I think the 4-5 Philly Indiana series is going to be great. And I think that's the one. You know, I think they're good, but I think they're a tough playoff team because they can play slow and play hard, and they don't quit on games. But I think they're...
Nate McMillan, right?
Them and Philly are 4-5 in East, and it's going to be a hell of a series in April.
Indiana is one of those teams like Milwaukee that in the beginning of the season, I didn't know why Philly was ranked higher than them. Obviously, there's talent in Philly, but what we see in Milwaukee, what we see with Indiana is teams that they've been battered a bit by the playoffs. They kind of understand who they are. They have more of a veteran presence on their rosters. And for whatever reason, Victor Oladipo found himself in Indiana. And he's a different player.
How about that trade now?
Yeah.
Huh? Like everybody, you're getting Sabonis and Oladipo for Paul George. What? Are you kidding? You're getting fleeced. Oh, really?
No, he's been great. And then Milwaukee's another team that has, I don't know why people don't believe in Milwaukee. Because I feel like Milwaukee's about to jump off at some point, and the Eastern Conference is going to struggle with them.
Yeah.
Because I think that it's easy to get enamored with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. They're phenomenal talents. But there's something about Antetokounmpo that's different. And the way that that team plays right now, they're playing up and down. They're scoring the basketball. I think they're long and athletic, and they're a team that can create problems for anybody in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. So I look at Milwaukee and Indiana as two teams that I would rank, when the dust settles, higher than Philly.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right, Sherman. And I think that the interesting thing with Milwaukee is that what Mike Budenholzer basically had a choice of two jobs, Toronto and Milwaukee. Yeah. And he took Milwaukee because
he didn't know Kawhi was coming.
Exactly.
He didn't know Kawhi was coming, that's for sure. And at that point, if you take the Toronto job, you can't win. Because you've just won 59 games,
right,
and you've been a really good team, you can't win. You go to Milwaukee, and you free them up, and now maybe you win 57 games with the Bucks, and you're like the coach of the year.
Right.
And you free them up. And I think of all the teams that changed, and there were 8 coaching changes last year in the summer, the one that's benefited the most has probably been the Bucks, because he's just let them play faster and more freely.
Doug, I agree. And we had talked about this before. I didn't know the impact that he would have there. I thought, okay, yeah, they're going to be better. And I remember a game early in the season in Toronto. I think it was second game of the year. Hubie Brown comes in, and I was teasing him like, oh, you can't be in this country without a Jones close to you. My brother was off doing college football. And I said, Coach, give me a rundown on the East. And he said, this team Toronto. He said, now watch out for Milwaukee now. Watch out now. Come on. Watch out for Milwaukee. Budenholzer, I tell you, watch out. Come on. And I'm like, all right. Yeah, I mean, he's going to make a difference. But I think, personally, I underestimated it.
He won 60 games in Atlanta with a team that, when you look back, wasn't particularly good.
Wasn't 4 All-Stars?
Yeah, but I think that's why they don't let people vote on All-Stars anymore. Yeah. But that's never mind. Sorry, folks, I didn't rip that. But
But it's the same style. It's the same style as that 60-win team.
Share the ball, shoot threes.
He brought Atlanta to Milwaukee.
They led the league in assists, didn't they? That
yeah, he brought Atlanta to Milwaukee.
They play five out.
Yep.
Losing John Henson is going to be a bit of a problem over there, I think, because he gave him some sort of anchor a little bit. But I wouldn't want to play him in the playoffs. And I think the 1-4 matchup, if it's got Toronto-Milwaukee in the second round, after Toronto plays Detroit in the first round, it's going to be like a hell of a playoff round.
That's going to be draining.
You think Detroit's going to be 8?
I hope so. I was listening earlier on one of your earlier panels. I believe it was the first one when they talked about
Casey Beef
with
Nick Nurse. Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to
talk about that, please.
And there's some interesting aspects to that. That yes, Casey has a little bit of animosity towards Nick Nurse, and people thought it was like a one-on-one grudge. And Casey's got a problem with Nurse. Guess what? Casey's got a problem with Mazai too. This is not like a one guy on one guy thing. Case got some problems with a lot of people in the organization, probably rightfully so. But to just think it's Dwayne against Nick, Dwayne got some bitterness towards Mazai that's untold, big time.
Why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Well, we talked about it when he talked to Dave Feshuck in Detroit, and I've talked to him privately about it. Mazai wasn't going to fire him Thursday; and fired him Saturday. So this is not a good breaking up. And it's not so much who got the job as how the job became open.
Right.
And I think that's going to be a hell of a story for that 1-8 playoff round.
Do you think there's similarities in the way it went down between Case and the way it went down between DeMar? How DeMar's story was that he said he wasn't going to get traded, and then all of a sudden, boom, he was traded. And then you just said Casey said he's got the job Thursday, and boom, he's gone Saturday.
You should be like, you're very astute. That's
I'll
pretty
take
good.
Credit for that.
You
but
are.
I'm
no,
just
that,
listening.
I think you're absolutely right. I think stuff happens quickly in pro sports, and it happened very, very quickly with DeMar and the trade for Kawhi, and I think it happened just as quickly with the idea of changing coaches. Okay. I don't want anybody to think Mazai fired Dwayne so we could hire Nick, because that's absolutely not true. But I do think stuff happened quickly, that almost as quickly as it did with DeMar. I think he traded DeMar because he could get Kawhi. But I don't think he fired Dwayne so we could hire Nick.
Business-wise, the Kawhi deal works. It's a no-brainer. You get a top 3-5 player. And as good as DeMar's been, and I loved working with DeMar. He was a great guy. He grew every year. He was what you wanted for a franchise player in terms of integrity, in terms of buying into the situation and committing to the city. We haven't had an all-star do that.
And I think, Sherm, that's what hurt people. I mean, they watched this guy. I mean, you and I, we were all here.
I'm not the heartstring guy, though.
No,
I mean,
but I'm saying, though.
Really?
Mother. No.
Aww.
I'm saying.
Right?
I'm saying.
So shocking.
I meant from a business. Fan, from a fan standpoint. And you started with business. And I'm going to the heartstrings.
I'm not that guy.
And that's what happened with the fans.
We know, Sherm.
When he was drafted here. The Colangelo regime said, oh, you watch, we're going to make this kid an all-star. And everybody kind of...
Easy on the vodka.
Watch that vodka,
please,
man.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's not even open yet.
I'm telling you, make mine a double.
And everybody said, you know, we're going to make him an all-star. And everybody kind of rolled their eyes like, oh, yeah, our first-round pick, he's going to be an all-star, yeah. And they did. They made him an all-star. It took a few regimes to do that. And he loved the city. He stayed. Everybody will take your money once. He took the money
except
twice.
For the casino. Yeah. Casino takes my money every time.
Every time.
No. They don't take it. You give it to them.
Casinos.
They don't take it. You give it to them. And the second time, DeMar settled for less than the max. He was out there trumpeting Toronto's cause. And I think, as Sherm said, the heartstrings, that's what hurt people. But from a business standpoint...
Oh, it's a defensible basketball trade from the day it happened. Yeah. There's no question about that. But see... Babe, I'm a heartstring guy.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That doesn't
plus
surprise
DeMar,
me either.
DeMar's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
DeMar is a great guy.
But we
all work with him.
In the hard-hearted world of pro sports.
He's got to go.
Got to go.
He's got to go.
To get that guy.
Absolutely.
Not to get some
not
schmo.
For anybody else.
Yeah. Not Kyle Korver, but to get that guy.
And in the first, what, 18 games that that guy has played,
pretty good.
He's shown why.
Pretty
you
good.
Go get that.
We
guy.
Can't say his name.
You got to get
what's that?
That.
We're just calling him that guy now.
Who you talking about?
That guy.
That guy.
Who's that?
The guy.
Hey, what are you talking
Danny
about?
Danny Green
first.
Danny Green.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That, yeah, Danny Green.
I don't know.
God.
Third base.
That guy came out with a new shoe deal today.
Yeah,
and
we
it's
were
funny when he came
that.
To talk to the media, he had no suit, no shoes on. He's wearing socks.
Oh, because he never got a set.
I'm not kidding you. Yeah. I kid you not.
Deal wasn't done.
We were sitting there, and
deal's
somebody,
not signed, man.
Hey, the money's in the bank.
Does somebody yelled it out and said, "Hey, you know, new deal." And they brought him down the hall. PR brought him down the hall, and he turned the corner into the little room, and everybody was talking to him. And I happened to look down. I'm like, Cat, where's your shoes?
Not signed. Deal's not signed. I wear your shoes.
That's right.
I
can't wear any shoes. I thought that was kind of neat.
That's why the Converse, I'm waiting for my contract to kick in, too. Before
you're still in negotiation.
Really, the shoes are very comfortable, I heard earlier tonight.
What, New Balance?
The New Balance, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people in the audience represent for New Balance. They like it, yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
Are you serious? People rock New Balance?
Yeah.
I know it's a comfortable shoe.
No, they did it. They recently
it's a good
did,
walking
like, a
shoe, I heard.
It's a
that's
great walking shoe.
Yeah, walking shoe. It's Katie
I don't
still
walk
there.
Much.
Katie told us it was a walking shoe.
My 93-year-old
Katie,
dad has a pair
it.
Of New Balance.
No, they're
yeah,
apparently.
Katie is still here.
Yeah,
she told us it's a walking shoe.
Katie works for New Balance on the side. Yeah.
Where are you?
Katie's right there in the red, in the corner.
I do like New Balance.
There you go. There
I'm
you
just
go.
Saying. I'm just. It's a
there
great shoe. I've heard.
Shoe.
I don't know personally.
Comfortable old shoe. Old shoe.
It's a great shoe.
It's like me. I'm a comfortable old
shoe. But I don't run.
Shoe.
I don't walk. I don't run. I don't walk.
No.
What do you do?
I drive.
What good comes of running?
Nothing.
Not
you.
Zero.
Your knees hurt. Your back
zero.
Hurt. You could get run over.
In the words
you could
of
fall
Sam,
down.
In the words nothing of Sam good. Mitchell, nothing zero.
Good. Nothing. Nothing happens. But good.
When I used to jog, I used to take bus fare in my sock just in case it got too much.
Hey, that's called
so
forward thinking.
So I could go
thinking.
Home and just, take the bus.
I like that.
All right, Rosie.
Just smart.
Rosie who?
Rosie?
That's way before.
O'Donnell?
That's way before.
No. She took the subway in the Boston Marathon.
Rosie Ruiz.
Rosie Ruiz.
Oh, really?
She ran the first mile.
And then got on a bus?
Got on the subway.
Went to
like the 24th, 25th mile.
She went
put
for
a little water
hours.
On her, little vodka, ran across the finish line, got the little wreath, you know, was raising
woo,
her hands. And somebody said, yo, I saw that woman on the subway.
Yep. That's a mission I would do. I'd
yeah,
do
you would.
In a heartbeat.
Not the bus, though. Probably a
people
private
run
car.
Marathons?
What's that?
People run marathons?
People with issues.
Absolutely. I drive a marathon, I get tired.
Okay, should we get back to basketball? I don't know.
No, why not?
You guys. I kind of want to talk about Markelle Fultz for a second because it just seems like every single second there's something else with this kid.
And every other first draft pick that it didn't make it is going, yes, I'm off the hook.
But like...
Andrea Bargnani, go, bam, 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 bam,
with
oh, bam.
A glass of wine and some pasta. But no, isn't it such a weird situation, though, because it's a shoulder issue, it's a wrist issue, it's this weird training that's happening last year, the organization is standing for him, but then burner accounts are talking smack about him, and it's just like so many things have happened, and there's really no answer, and it seems as though with all the medical advancements that we have, they should be able to pinpoint an issue. So is it not physical, is it mental?
I think the kid's buried. Like, I don't know how, like, it's going to take a lot to come back from this. I mean, with the expectations of the... Well, look at our guy, Anthony Bennett. Like, once you're number one and you don't kind of jump off and get going right away, Bargnani, people jump on you. It's crazy.
That's an interesting analogy, Anthony Bennett. But
I mean, I'm not...
My point is that no one expected Anthony Bennett to go one.
Right.
Everybody expected Fultz to
true.
Be one.
True.
Once they made the trade. Sure, you play a little golf, right? You know your way around the course?
Yes.
You play a little bit.
Yeah, I do.
How can a 21-year-old kid have the yips? Because that's what he's got.
That's way too deep of a question for me. Way too deep.
That's mental, Ash.
But it is mental.
The yips,
but don't
that's
you
mental.
No, I know. I have them in golf.
Sure.
Do you?
Well, I'm terrible, so I imagine that's what it's called.
He definitely
you just can't
has.
Get good.
There's a mental block with the young man. But to me... I think it goes all the way back to, it's not like this kid won a ton of games in college. He got drafted number one overall, but I mean, but you think about what he did. He wasn't, to me, a winning player in college.
No, what'd they win, 3-4 games that year?
So now we're talking about putting him in another situation where it's a young team and he's coming in there with all this expectation. look, whatever's going on with his wrist, with his shoulder, now it's neck up. Like, doctors could fix everything now. It's neck up. Like, he needs to disappear, fix his head, and come back.
And I don't think he can disappear on a trade to another NBA team.
No.
I think that, you know, people say you get a fresh start if they move him to Phoenix or wherever.
Wherever he goes,
I don't think that's going to work. Because the people are going to clamor to over him till he fixes it. And I don't think he gets it fixed.
But you think about Philly and Jahlil Okafor. And how that young man had talent.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get any shine. I wonder what goes on once something happens there with a young player. It seems like they just can't recover from it. And I don't know what it is, but I just think Fultz is in a bad situation. And I don't know how he gets out of it without... And I'm not making light of this. Like, he seriously is going to have to sit down with somebody and go through some things psychologically.
Yeah.
To figure out how we can correct what's happening.
I agree. I mean, it got to the point this year where when he was on the floor and he'd make like a 10-footer, there were wild cheers. And I don't know.
That's almost worse.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They were derisive. They were like, you know, sarcastic.
And we have the tendency.
From Philly fans?
No.
That's not Philly, right? And we have the tendency as fans of basketball, as people who look at these guys making millions of dollars and just kind of underplay how difficult that can be from a human side. To be in that type of position, have all these expectations, and just not be able to accomplish it. Yes, your bank account is great. You're going to get great money. But when players on that level get there and they want to be good and they can't be good, the money doesn't help them.
And every day, people are grinding on you.
Absolutely.
People are reminding you how much.
Good?
Yeah.
Why aren't you earning your money?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to take that kind of money to be under that spotlight.
Oh, I think you would.
I would.
Sorry.
I would.
We're like Abbott Costello right here. That's good. I'll set him up. That's gonna be.
I would take that money.
100%.
Easy. Maybe half.
Man.
That's true. There's a common theme here.
That kind of money, they can get half.
The first time.
But no, I think young players with expectations who
it's tough.
Aren't mentally tough find it hard to deal with. And I think there was a little bit with Anthony Bennett. It was a little bit with Andrea Bargnani.
And no matter how mentally tough you are, you're still going to get tested. Like, if you're mentally tough, there something will come that will make you second guess, renege on some of your other thoughts. It'll just, like you said, Doug, it'll grind you, and you'll second guess yourself. Like, yeah, I'm tough enough to go through this, no problem. But you'll get to a point where you're either going to turn around and say, yeah, I'm going to tough this out, or you break and you cross the line, like Markel Fultz, and how do you get back?
And I do think there's a little bit of nurture in there as well, the organization around you and the teammates you have and the people around you are absolutely important in that respect, in the mental respect of being a young professional athlete, making a lot of money with a lot of responsibility. Your team's got to surround you with a good support system. Yeah. Your family and your friends have to be supportive and not critical and not
and they're
too soft, too soft on you.
Before the Jimmy Butler trade, when you think about it, like they're important people are pretty young, with the exception of maybe J.J. Redick. And they've got...
Oh, in Philly, yeah.
They got Amir. Like,
and you think Philly would get it, too, because, I mean, Joel Embiid, he missed significant time.
Sure.
Ben Simmons missed significant time. So now they have another situation where this kid's going to miss some time. I don't know if they're going to really invest in him, because they've put so much time into two guys who are clearly going to be stars.
And he's always not going to be Jason Tatum.
He's not.
That's the thing.
He's
not going to be the guy you traded out of the spot for.
Yeah.
Because imagine. Wow. And I know. Wow.
And that
in a shocking development, but the Philly fans are a little prickish. And they look at Boston and they see what they got
when they traded
the guy so they could draft this guy who now gets a little fragile, and the team doesn't win.
Yeah. Wow.
The other part of that too is that ship has sailed in Philly. The development thing ain't flying anymore. They are last year. I didn't see them winning 50 games last year, but they're past the point of, oh, we're going to let this guy develop. They tried it for, what, 10, 15 games this year and then junked it because they're into winning. They're into winning right now.
Yeah, and I think they're the fifth best team in the East. So they got to do something. And it's taken a long time and a lot of losses. And this gets back to what we talked about here 4 years ago, blowing it up, going in the tank. It takes so long to blow it up, and getting it back is so fragile and yep. full of luck and fluke that you can't guarantee it. So you should never go in the toilet, because they did go in the toilet in Philly for a long time and did it intentionally.
They put guys out who could not win.
And now they are a second-round playoff team, maybe. Right.
Right. It's true. Maybe.
You're right.
Maybe.
And 5 years ago, 7 years ago in Toronto, that's what people wanted the Raptors to do. Tank for Wiggins.
Mm. How's that working out?
Wow.
Remember that? Remember yeah. tank for Wiggins?
Now. Oh, yeah.
Where's Grange? Where's Grange, by the way?
Because
that's one of his babies.
You tell me a time when winning is not good.
Never.
Thank you.
Learn how to win. Don't learn how to lose.
Thank you.
Life amen. Lessons. Yeah, amen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I get amen? No.
There we go. Taking people to church
and some,
today.
And some water, I mean.
The Washington Wizards. We can move on now. they're having some internal issues. They did win a couple games after that whole stuff blew up. I guess that's what a team does. They either implode even further or they come together a little bit. But my question is not so much about that situation. It's more about John Wall specifically. And a lot of teammates and past teammates had some negative things to say about him. And it's not something that's really relatively new, right? Like, this has been like a year or two has been the rumors about John Wall. He's very difficult to play on a team with. My question to you guys is, do the players around the superstar need to like him to be successful?
Absolutely not.
No.
You played the superstars. You know superstars.
Yeah, talk to me about you being hated as a superstar, Sherman.
Well, not me, but I played with one.
You played with one, yeah. Yeah, you played with one.
I fortunately got along with him very well because I wanted him to pass me the ball. But, I mean, you hear the stories about Michael. You hear the stories about Kobe.
Yeah.
They're difficult to play with, but they're winners. And to me,
the guy at the Lakers,
exactly,
yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
LeBron. So to me, I don't. I think there's give and take. I mean, John Wall is not a superstar number one,
right?
He's a good player.
He's a regular star,
and he's a guy who he kind of fluctuates between a good player and he drops down sometimes. And right now, he's dropped a bit. He's a bit out of shape from what I see. He's not playing at the level, and he's coming back from injury. So I get it. But the whole situation in Washington, I think, and we've talked about this, Jonesy.
Many times.
What happened when John Wall went down last season?
They won a lot.
They got better.
A lot, and they also realized that Bradley Beal was better than they thought he was. They allowed Bradley to handle the ball. They allowed him to play the point. He was moving the basketball.
He had a 50-point game in Portland.
Yeah,
he had a 50-point game without John Wall.
And wasn't Marcin Gortat
said, we all eat.
We all eat.
Yeah. And John Wall went crazy.
And he retweeted him.
Damning statement.
Yeah.
And when you think about Washington, John Wall has a kicker on his salary, a 15% kicker. And
what,
you look
42?
At what he's
38 right now. It'll be 43
making,
by the last 38.
So,
the last
43.
Year his, the last year of his extension that kicks in at the start of next year will be worth $47 million.
Now.
That's in 2022, right? Or 2022?
I'll be in my grave at the time. But $47
million. Don't leave us,
Doug. That's like 3 years.
$47 million for John Wall.
All right, this is my point. So if you're Washington, now you're in a position where you know nobody in the league is going to take that guy.
Ever. There are no untradeable contracts.
Right.
Now there are.
So nobody's going to take that deal.
Alex Anthopoulos on line one.
But you also know that.
Isn't that Vernon, right?
A lot of teams want Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
Because he's a piece.
But you can't get them both.
Thank you.
Because what team's going to take them both?
Right.
If you're Washington, I think what you have to do is.
You got to trade them both.
Well, yeah.
I don't think you can.
To separate places.
Sit Wall. If you can't get rid of Wall, Beal's only making $25 million. I mean, you put two, three guys together and that
Trump
somebody.
Change.
Yeah.
Trump change.
Yeah. And get
like Serge Ibaka
Beal.
Money.
If you need to sit Wall down, and you probably should have done this, Ernie Grunfeld, before, and had a heart-to-heart with him about, we're paying you all this money. Here's what we expect. Well, I don't know if I would have given him the max.
I'm sure they had that. I'm sure they had that conversation. He told them everything they wanted to hear. Well,
it's like a job interview. They're going to offer you $40 million. You're going to be like, absolutely.
I was talking to an NBA general manager 10 days ago about Washington when they were in the turmoil, and the guy said to me, "Look, it's just happening earlier. It happens every year. This year, it just happened earlier in the year.
Yes.
It happens when Wall comes back from injuries. It happened at the end of last year with the Raptors during the series. They weren't getting along. This happens all the time. Now it's starting earlier, so now you really got to make the move. But you can't trade. Wall's basically untradeable unless you sweeten a pot with every first-round pick you got forever. Mm-hmm. And Beal has got a tradable contract. But if you trade them both and give up all your first-round picks, you may as well move the franchise to Oakville because no one's going to want to watch it.
Well, the dilemma, too, is, I mean, as good as a player as Bradley Beal is, if you can get value, because that's probably the only guy that you're going to get some value in return, then what you come back and look at is saying, okay, now my cornerstone is John Wall and no Bradley Beal. So now we got to figure out how to build around John Wall again.
Exactly. And that's why
it didn't work.
If you're going to do that, you got to sit him down again and say, "Hey, dude, we're 38, 42, 45.
He wears sunglasses on the bench.
And he comes in into the gym wearing something different than everybody else. Like everybody's in their gear except for him.
You never wore sunglasses.
I heard Otto Porter over here.
One of those tinted glasses.
Did you see how good Otto Porter was last year when John Wall was out? Yeah. Yeah.
It's obvious. I mean,
yeah,
they played better without John Wall, but the organization can't come out and say the guy we're paying the most, our team is actually crappier with him on it.
We got to move him.
Right. It doesn't work like that, but they know it.
Oh, sure.
They know it.
Ernie Grunfeld's not the best general manager in the history of general managers, but he would know this. And then he would call the other general managers and say, "I got this guy, Wall. Perhaps you heard of him.
Have you heard of him?
Have you heard of him? He's pretty fast. Used to be when he wasn't fat. But how would you like him? He'd look good on your team, wouldn't he?" Mr. Other General Manager. And the other general manager's going to go, "John Wall, right? The fat guy who can't run anymore? Whose players, teammates hate him?
He's just a little fluffy. He's fine. It was a bad angle for the photo. A little fluffy.
He looks closer to me than an athlete.
Stop. I don't even know what to say.
Don't touch me with that one, Dougie.
If that's the scale. Finely tuned athlete, fat 60-year-old. Where's he fit? He fits on the other side.
I feel like
he's a little closer down towards finely tuned, Doug.
Plus he's a bad teammate. So you got that going for him too.
You're a great teammate, Doug.
They're in a tough spot. They are in a tough spot because I mean, that's
he's still pretty fast though, Doug.
the biggest killer right now with them too is for a guy who they look at Wall, who's a decent defensive player. I mean, he's got good size. When he chooses to be, he can be. They haven't been playing very hard recently. Their defense has been terrible. I mean, again, it goes back to point of attack, who's guarding the ball, who's setting the tone.
All right, so all the good stuff in the NBA, we're wasting a lot of time on the Washington Wizards.
Okay, next.
How about the West? How about the Clippers?
Okay.
How about
the Clippers?
And I talked to Rex a couple days ago.
Oh, go ahead.
Talked to Rex Kalamian a couple days ago. Yeah, and he said that they are learning the new defensive system. They're taking to it well. There's still a long way to go, but he's pleased with how well they've adapted to it. And you know, somebody said this to me, and I had to think about it. Right now, the Clippers remind them of one of those teams, not exactly, but like the Pistons when they won. A bunch of good players. There's no real star, but you've got a bunch of good players playing well. I don't think their guys, I mean, obviously can't compare to Chauncey and Rip and Tayshaun. Like, they don't compare on that level, but Tobias Harris played pretty well. Montrezl Harrell is, like, he's not a big guy trying to shoot step back threes or whatever. He's in the paint. He's rebounding. He runs hard. Somebody said he's Reggie Evans without all the junk.
And more skill?
Well, yeah. You know, Lou Williams doing what Lou does. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been terrific.
Yeah.
So, you know, they, you know, people are saying they could finish first in the West. Or second in the West behind Golden State. I mean, I don't see that right now. I could be wrong, but, man, they're playing great right now.
Outside of Denver, I don't know who's better than them.
Take
Golden State here, but in that Clippers, Denver, Portland, Utah, that group, San Antonio.
How many games between 2 and, like, 12 in the West right now? Like the Lakers are... Where are the Lakers?
The Lakers are 7th right now.
So they're 2.5 games from 2nd, and they're 2.5 games from 14th.
How do you know
the
that?
Lakers.
It's my job. What do you mean?
Wow.
My job to know these things, Doug.
I put like a cheat sheet there. You got that computer.
It's closed. A computer. It's a notebook. No more vodka for you.
Who has a notebook?
Ashley does.
Ryan Gosling? I don't know. This is a bad joke. I'm corny. I don't know what to say. I do kind of want to talk about the Warriors a little bit, but you guys feel free to change the subject if you want. It's your show. The drama there. KD's pending free agency. I don't think that his rift with Draymond is going to affect them once Steph Curry is like fully back in the mix and everything's good to go. But next year, if he leaves, what does this team look like?
If Klay Thompson stays?
Which I think he is. He was on the TNT panel last year, and he was basically saying he's willing to take a discount. He loves his life there. He doesn't care. He's super low-key about everything. So if he stays true to that, then he'll be there.
If Klay Thompson stays and they can spend that Durant money and get a couple, they'll be pretty good still. I mean...
They did win a championship without Kevin Durant, right?
Oh, I know. Draymond reminded him of that.
And that's just it. You know, Ashley, that's just it. I think the biggest thing is, with Draymond reminding him, it's like, well, no, we saved you. You won those championships because of us.
But also,
because of
all
of us.
Guys are
and Kevin Durant saying,
older.
Hold on a second. You guys called me. And I think I played pretty good during those championships.
But all those core key guys are a little bit older, right? Like, you had Livingston, you had Iggy. Like, they're 35, 30.
Iggy says he's going to retire in 3 years, right?
In 3 years from this point?
That's what he said.
But even still, he's turning 35 in January. So, like, all that. They did win without KD, but they're now all almost half a decade older.
Yeah, but if they
older.
Have the money to make some moves, they can make some moves. Look, I think...
Well, Boogie's a factor, too. Right. Where is he going to be?
There's no question that... Kevin Durant's the best player on that team. There's no question about that in my estimation. That team wins because they play as a team, though. This is not Kevin Durant going out there and getting 40 every night. I mean, he's doing it now, but that's not how they win. They win. Steph is dropping 25, 28. Klay is dropping 23, 24. Draymond with his double-double. KD's usually leading scoring, but...
They don't play like LeBron and a bunch
of
guys.
They don't. So that style... When you can inject quality talent, has a chance to win. My thing is, the way the NBA has gone, and especially LeBron, the way that he's kind of played chess while everyone's playing checkers with the NBA and dictated his moves way before they ever happened, planned them out, it wouldn't surprise me that Kevin Durant already knows what his move is.
Yeah.
You know, he's already got the game plan in place.
And
he's just got to go through the gauntlet right now.
You got to run the numbers. You got to get you through the year. I think the Warriors are probably, after all they've been through and all they've done, are a little bit bored.
You can see it in the regular season.
And they need a little bit of juice.
Yep.
They need a little bit of controversy. Whether it's manufactured or self-inflicted or from outside, they need something to keep them energized because, frankly, it's November. They're bored.
Fast forward to April. That's what they want to do. Fast forward to April.
And if they can manufacture stuff that gets them a little bit of controversy, a little bit of juice, a little bit of energy, they're better for it in November, December because the dog days are from game 5 to 75. For Golden State, because they're going to finish first or second, they don't care. They're like LeBron's teams. They don't care where they finish, what home court is. They're going to win in the playoffs. And I think they need something that sort of energizes them, and this has given it to them, and they'll be fine.
I'm interested to see, in that same vein, Doug, I'm interested to see what they're like tomorrow night, right? Because...
They'll be juiced up.
Oh, yeah. That's my point. That's my point. This is the challenge. They're coming in here. Everybody's talking about Toronto, the
and
best
we
record.
We don't know who's going to play because on the 5:30 p.m. injury report, they had Curry and Green both out.
Right.
So we don't know. We won't know till tomorrow night who's going to play. They're not going to have a shoot around, so we won't find out till like 6:30. But whoever plays,
they're
going to
be juiced up.
Guy,
they're going to be juiced up.
They're going to be a little bit energized. It's their first trip east. Their first game of an Eastern trip. They got an 18-4 team. It's really good, and they might want to slap them around a little bit. So I think there's going
to
be a little bit of. Some energy on the Warriors that you don't see in most regular season games.
Well, I had to admire Draymond Green. I mean, you looked at one of the best players in the world and told him, we won without you.
We don't need you. Who are you?
What? Well, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I got like...
And a teammate,
you just
like
ate something that ain't good right now. Because that doesn't make any... And Kevin Durant, like if there was a bubble over his head, just imagine that. The things that would be popping up.
What the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about?
But that conversation, I would have loved to hear the exchange there and hear and just see the players around like, man, Draymond's crazy right now. Yeah. I'd throw him off a cliff for Kevin Durant. And Draymond believed everything he said.
Absolutely, 100%.
He believed everything
100%,
he said.
100%. We don't need you, motherfucker.
That is awesome.
Except we came and got you.
It's awesome.
Except I called you from the arena after I got beat by Cleveland.
That is awesome.
But we don't need you, mother.
Exactly.
But that's where I started. I mean, Kevin Durant must be thinking, wait a minute, they think they saved me. Didn't I save them? And that's therein lies... The gap.
And Steph's sitting back going, I'm going to play at Pebble Beach tomorrow. I might play at Augusta on Thursday. Yep. I'll see you guys in June. Yep. Yep. And Steve Kerr's going, why we elect that fucking president?
Oh, my God. All right, guys. Doug, always with the heat, Doug. All right, we have a question here. We're going to do questions now. Alex, you want to stand up? This is Alex.
So, let's say a superstar becomes available. I don't want to say Anthony Davis. Well, I guess I just said Anthony Davis. But the Raptors, let's say they can offer OG and Siakam. And if the Celtics want to put in Brown and Tatum, and I don't know what other young talent other teams could put together. But if the Raptors think they would want to do that, just basically how could their best offer stack up against other teams if someone does become available?
Is this an in-the-season trade?
No, this is like a... After the season, like kind of like Paul George or Jimmy Butler in years past, but I guess before July 1st, when...
Alex, if I'm New Orleans, and you have a player like that, and you got him through the draft, you'd have to cut off my right arm to trade him. Like, those guys don't come around. And I give Masai credit for trading for one of those guys. Because they don't come up very often for trade, and when you get one, you hang on to it.
And the realities are you can't make the money work with anything that if you it can't be it's never going to be talent for talent because you have to make Davis's contract value up among the pieces you're giving up. I would think the Celtics would probably have more pieces they could offer to get a guy like that because they have. The Sacramento pick, I think, or the Philly pick that went through Sacramento, they have an extra pick that might sweeten the pot. But if I don't think New Orleans would, New Orleans, do you trade Davis or lose him for nothing? That's the age old theory. But I do think that Boston still to this day can make a better offer for a player than Toronto can. When you take finances into consideration. Because OG and Pascal and those guys, they make no money.
They're still on rookie deals, yeah.
They make no money, really.
Yeah. Okay, we have Nicole back here with a question.
Hi, guys. I'm having DeMar withdrawal, and I just want to know what you guys think about him in San Antonio and how he's doing there.
I love what he's doing in San Antonio. I absolutely love it. I mean, if there's ever a player that I wish has the most success and gets as far as he can go, it's DeMar, because he's just a quality person, and watching him improve every year has been, it's been phenomenal to watch.
He's been doing a lot of the same stuff too,
but he's rebounding, yeah. He's assisting yeah. more, he's scoring, like he's been asked to do more, he's been challenged. So I love what he's doing in San Antonio, and I think that for DeMar, he needed to go there and be the kind of player he knew he could be. I mean, he did it in this city for years. He goes to the Western Conference. There are more challenges consistently every night, and he is knocking them down and knocking them out. So I really, really love what he's doing, and there's a little piece of me that has DeMar withdrawal.
Just yeah, I'm
a little piece.
I'm like the biggest DeMar fan in the media in Toronto, maybe of all time, and I'm very proud of him. Because he wasn't happy, he was a little bit worried about how he would fit with another mid-range guy in LaMarcus Aldridge, and he's doing exactly what he did in the Eastern Conference. Remember last year, I think, or the year before, where he had 5 30-point games in the first eight. He's having that kind of start to his season, and he's. And I'm just proud of him. I have great withdrawal. I hope he has great success. I presume he will be an all-star again. And I think Pop was good for him. I think Mazai, if you're going to... There probably wasn't a better place in the NBA for DeMar to land than San Antonio for small city, great coach, great culture. And I'm proud of him, and I hope he has hope he has career years in every imaginable statistical category.
Nicole, like these guys, same thing. We watched him come here as a 19-year-old, like I said, and watched him grow, and you know, have a family here, and become what he is. And I think what I like is, for all those people that were saying, well, you know, he's doing it in Toronto, or he's the only guy there, or whatever. He's in a market now where, as Doug said, it's a small market, but it's a very well-respected NBA market, a championship market, and he's playing well, and he's fitting in, and he's one of the leaders on that team. And it says something about him. I guess if there was ever a time for him to move, it would have been now, because he's got the maturity level, even though he might have been a little bit worried, he's got the maturity level as a player and a person to be able to handle it. So, good for him. Good for him.
Okay, next question is from Greg back here. So, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just got a quick question about Canada basketball. So, I know Sherm mentioned that he played with Steve Nash, and obviously we know that's one of the best Canadian teams of all time.
Last Canadian team to go to the Olympics, right?
You are correct.
Men's?
Yeah, that's true. And I just had a quick question about we obviously know... that R.J. Barrett's playing in Duke. He's, you know, playing very well. And I just want to know what you guys think about the future of Canada basketball and sort of where Wiggins fits in and you know, how R.J.'s playing and sort of where we're going. And are we going to medal soon?
If Wiggins fits in?
So I've always thought that, you know, this influx of NBA talent that we have in Canada has been an amazing thing. And it's going to continue to happen. But what we've seen is... the talent that's gone to the NBA have been role players. That's not a knock. You made the league. You're lasting in the best league in the world. It's an awesome achievement. But internationally, you need to have alpha dogs. And what we're seeing now is that I played with an alpha dog in Steve. He was an alpha dog, and he would dominate. Andrew Wiggins was never an alpha dog. Very good player, but never an alpha dog. And now we're seeing Jamal Murray emerge as an alpha dog. We're hoping that RJ Barrett can emerge as an alpha dog. So now we're seeing that next level of NBA player that's not part of the rotation, but is showcased on NBA teams, plays a run for them in crucial junctures of the game so they get those reps. And those are the guys that make the difference. You need these other guys who are team players, who can make plays outside of them. But there are points internationally where you need your alpha dog to be an alpha dog.
And
I'm going to bring up a country here. I think we're all thinking of the same place. Argentina.
Well, they had a few alphas.
Yeah, but I'm saying though, they had a run, and I think Canada might Canada, if they can find, as Sherm said, some alphas, Canada might be entering a run like that with a bunch of really, really good players that are also playing in the NBA. And when they come back to play for their national team, they understand who the, if they can find it, they understand who the alpha is. And they follow. They had a few. Right. But you think about it. Argentina, Delfino, Oberto, all those guys. They were all
Ginobili.
Scola. They were all NBA players.
Walter Hermann.
Were all NBA players. And then when they, and old enough and mature enough that when they went back to their national team, they knew which guy was going to lead at which point. And they were really good. They had a golden age that was very, very good.
And we beat them, though.
And you beat them. And you beat Spain.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, you guys were damn good.
With Gasol.
I'm going to say this right now, and I'm actually just about to write this for tomorrow, that it is harder to it's easier to qualify for the World Championships, but harder to win a medal there. And it's easier or harder to qualify for the Olympics and easier to win a medal there because of the numbers and the countries and the way it's divided. If
the qualifying system doesn't help right now either.
No, it doesn't, but Canada's going to get there. If Canada gets the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, Andrew Wiggins will not be on that team.
Now, there is going to be a point where they're going to have to cut NBA guys.
100%.
They did it this summer.
Because what we're not talking about, too, is the guys that play overseas
are good.
That are the heart and soul of the team right now, that are playing all these games throughout the course of the year that are helping Canada win. The NBA guys come when they come. But there's a group of guys. Brady Heslip is one of those
Kevin
guys.
Kevin Pangos.
These guys are
Bill
playing.
Bill Scrub.
Melvin Edgem.
Melvin should be in the league.
They're playing at a high level.
High level. Quality players.
Well, you guys had them. You had Mike Meeks. Yep. You had those guys that were.
You have to have those guys.
Unbelievably talented players that you didn't know about in North America because they were playing in the EuroLeague.
And I think Canada, we kind of got a bit ahead of ourselves when we saw this influx of NBA guys, and we said, all right, it's medal time.
No.
You got to get your scars over there. You got to get beat up a little bit and figure it out.
I was at the game in Mexico when they lost to Venezuela to go to
Rio. There you go.
And it was literally boys against men.
Yep.
And Venezuela were the men, and they won the game that mattered. And that's been the Canada issue for a long time. It takes, and we have this perception in North America that the rest of the world's basketball isn't that good, and they're just guys. Slovakia? Who's Slovenia? Kyrgyzstan or Tajikistan or whatever the hell they are? They're grown men who play high-level professional basketball.
For a living.
And frankly, they're better than us.
You know what's interesting? Because when you think about it, to your point, Doug, when you say they're grown men, when we qualified in 1999 for the Olympics, we were grown men.
You were men, absolutely.
We got our asses kicked.
Forever.
For 4 years straight. Missed the 1996 Olympics.
Yep.
Qualified for the 1998 Worlds. Got trounced in Greece.
Yeah. Oh.
And then qualified in 1999. Right.
Oh, right. Greece. Oh.
So we took our beat. We took our beatings, and to your point, that's what this team had to do. Yeah. Now, they need a consistent group. They need guys who are going to commit and come back and play together. And
they have that a little bit in Tristan and Corey and Kelly and those guys. They've had a group, but you're right. They're at that same thing you guys were. That Greece team, ooh, baby.
Yeah, we got busted.
That was not good.
It was a bad team.
But you know what? I needed that.
Because in 99, when we're playing Puerto Rico,
for win or go home,
we won
because we got our asses kicked.
100%. And this team, it's different. This Canadian version went through that in 2015 in Mexico, and maybe they're going to qualify for the Worlds. They're 7-1. They probably lose twice this weekend. I don't think they can win in Brazil or Venezuela because of the players they have. Plus, it's FIBA, and if they. South America team loses
there. The referees die.
They'll just negate the results and play the game again. Yeah. But they'll get there when they get to Newfoundland in February. I'm pretty convinced.
72 Olympics. Bring the ref.
I do think they'll go to the Worlds and probably get their heads handed to them because they'll be 23-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 24-year-olds. And when they get to Tokyo in 2020, they might be ready. And when you get to the Olympics, it's a 12-team tournament. A quarter of the teams win a medal. Yeah. So you got a far better shot there than you do in 32 teams in their 32 teams in a World Championships, where all the good teams are there.
Our country will be on the podium very soon.
I've always thought that with what we have or the potential, there should only be one or two countries in the world ahead of us. And I think that's coming because we've taken those lessons. So has
Slovakia, Slovenia. Spain is still going to be really good. France is like, when the new FIBA qualification process came two years ago.
Yeah.
The two countries that hurt most were France and Canada. Because most of France's best players play in the NBA, so they're not available for all the same windows. Most of the French players who are not in the NBA are in the EuroLeague. They're not available. And Canada is the same way. Yeah. All of its best players are in the NBA, and very few are in the EuroLeague, which is why there's a number. When Canada plays on Friday in Venezuela, it will be 34 guys have played for Canada
over the qualifying, yeah,
in this process. 34. The only other team in the FIBA Americas that has more has been the United States, who's had to use 36, I believe. I'm trying to think my math for the morning story, but the fact that Canada can dress 34 guys in 8 games and be 7-1 is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Shout out to Roy Rana too.
Rana has done a great job. Yeah. Gordy Herbert came back and coached 2 games.
That's my guy.
Your guy.
Yep.
Jay had him here in Toronto when they won too easily. So the depth of talent is there. But like Sherm says, you got to be grown up guys. Yeah. You got to be playing at a high level, and you got to have learned what it takes to win at that level.
Okay, we have another question from Nick back here.
Yes. So essentially in the last 2 hours, we've been talking about the Raptors, and we've talked more about Kyle Korver than Kyle Lowry. And just to build on one of Kareem's...
I take that as a personal insult.
I mean, I'm not going to blame you, but that's partially why.
Kareem talked about Kyle Lowry.
And just to build on Kareem's tweet, where he was essentially calling out Bill Simmons for not having Lowry as one of his all-NBA selections so far this year. Why do you think that we're not talking about Lowry nearly as much? Is it partly because it's a little bit old news?
Who's not talking about him?
Why? I think...
Like around the NBA world kind of thing?
He literally said us today also.
I'm using us as an example. I understand that we're talking more about Kawhi because it's, the new shiny thing, but I do wanted to talk a little bit more about Lowry and kind of get a sense of how do you guys think that he's playing so well this late in his career when he should technically be on the decline, but he's having the best year of his career?
I said this on our NBA TV Canada show. Kyle's not only an all-star, he is an all-NBA right now. He is. And when you think about it, Kyle came out as a junior, right? Or did he play his 4 years?
No, I might have played 3.
Yeah, you think it was 3.
Okay.
I don't know.
Back in the day, when you played 4 years of college ball and you learned a little bit about life and matured a little and learned basketball, you learned basketball first. Then when you come to the NBA, you learn the NBA game. A lot of kids are coming now 1 year removed from AAU, and they barely learn basketball, let alone the NBA game, which, as we just talked about in the international game, has grown men, as Charles Oakley says, playing for groceries. This is not, we're running in the schoolyard here. We're playing for money here. And Kyle, to me, has followed the path of one of those old school guys. When are they at their best? Between 27, 28, and like 31, 32. Yes. Really? Yes. Go back and look at when they played 4 years. And look at when a guy got to 28, 29, 30 years old. Those guys were both physically and mentally able to play at their best. You get to 31, 32, maybe some of the physical stuff starts to go, but man, you're playing with your head. And again, I go back to what these guys said, and it's true. I'll take the 5 28-year-olds at the park over the 5 19-year-olds that can jump and jam and like that because they understand how to play. And I think Kyle has kept his body in terrific shape, and he has always been a guy that you would want on your team. If you were playing in the schoolyard, you want Kyle. No question about it. And he came into the NBA doing that kind of stuff, hustling, taking charges, being a grinder. And now he's learned and become a better offensive player and kind of increased his skill set and his skill level. And that's why, to me, there's part of me that's not surprised that he's playing that well because he's going through it right now.
He's having a great year, no question about it. And the only exception, the only thing I would challenge, he got his body into good shape.
Yes.
He didn't keep it in because it was not in good shape when he got here. He remade himself at 28 years old for whatever reason, maturity, money.
Well, that's
family.
What I'm talking about, the 28, right? But like that's when he hits.
He got his body in good shape. It wasn't always in good shape. But he's having a great year, no question about it. I think there's still issues on him being able to keep a guy in front of him. But that's
welcome to the league.
That's league wide. He's a great big shot taker and a big shot maker. And I think he is, because the other all-star on the team hasn't played all the games, he's the Raptors' most valuable player right now through 21 games. And I think that may be the case after 82, but he's an upper echelon NBA point guard, no question about it, and we've known this. And maybe it's old, maybe because we're used to it. He's been an all-star for 4 years now. Maybe we're sort of like a nerd to it. That's what he is. But trust me, just because we don't write stories about him every day doesn't mean that we don't think he's very good every day.
I honestly think it's one of those things where when you look at Kyle's game, it's not pretty.
No.
It's just grimy. It's effective. It works. It's consistent. But he's not going to win any beauty contests with his game. He's hitting the floor all the time. He's not throwing these finger rolls up like Kyrie. He's not left-righting you to death and making it look like it's a balletic performance.
But I want him on my team.
But
he plays
hard. And when we get to see him every day grind it out, you have a more of appreciation for what he does. Now, he's not going to make top 10 plays for SportsCenter. He's just not. But Kyle has the ability that few players have where they get better, get their body right at a later stage in their career, and they become their most productive. And in that situation, you get a glimpse of to what he could have been in terms of, as you said, Doug, in his younger days, if he had approached it this way. But one thing about Kyle is you're not going to outwork him.
No.
And if you don't outwork him, because his career is based on that, he'll tell you. He'll say, I had to be a dirty mother to get the job done. He'll say it.
That was pretty good.
It was. It was. Really but good. That's how he is. So there's nothing pretty about what he does. But he does it hard. He makes winning plays. And if you notice, the veteran in him understands that I'm not as quick as I used to be. So I'm going to shoot the ball further away from the three-point line. That's going to give me more room to break guys down and get into the paint. And if I shoot it and I miss, I can get back.
Yeah.
But that's going to allow him to even last longer if he's shooting it deeper, if he's shooting it 3-4 feet behind the three-point line. But he won't win a beauty contest. When you put him up to a Kyrie Irving, Kyrie's too pretty with the handle. He looks too good. He looks too smooth.
Kemba Walker, same thing.
Kyle bounces the ball and goes in a straight line and goes through you and bounces off you, hits the ground, throws it over his head, and it goes in. It's a different game.
Yeah.
But again, the appreciation is getting to see him every day and every year and seeing this guy's good.
I want him on my team.
And to your point, he
plays hard. He does. Guys, Sherman and I, Doug, we're there every night. It's the third game in 4 nights, and you can see there's no energy. And Kyle's like, he's 2 for 9, but he's busting his tail. He's diving on the ground. He's taking charges. He's in the ref's face. I want the guy on my team. He wants to win. And I'll say this about Kyle. Everybody loves to win. That dude hates to lose.
That dude hates to lose. And you know what? Give me the – everybody loves to win. Oh, yeah, we play. And, you know, there's some guys that lose a game. It's like, oh, well, Kyle hates to lose. And you know what? Give me that cat that hates to lose. That's what I want.
Okay, we have a question way at the back from Ravi.
What's up? I had a question about what do you guys think as far as the Raptors being considered only a good only a good team during the regular season and, you know, chokers in the playoffs. Do you think that still sticks with us even with DeMar leaving? And was that like a DeMar thing or is that an organizational thing? Do you think that, and I'm talking about like kind of media and then also maybe players and coaches and how other teams treat us.
I'm going to answer your question with a question.
Oh no.
In the last 5 years in the NBA, in the Eastern Conference, who's won more playoff series than the Cleveland Cavaliers? Who's number one? Number one is Cleveland. Number two is Toronto.
It's a perception question. It's well, not about, like,
The perception is flawed.
Yeah,
the perception is flawed by the presence of... So the question was, do you...
I agree with what you're saying, but do you... I mean, there's a lot of things that we as Toronto fans know that the American media, let's say, just fails to even, you know,
I think the American media, when they look at it, they understand the presence of LeBron James negated everything that happened in the Eastern Conference for 5 years, 7 years.
Is that... Sorry to interrupt you. Is that the excuse then that, okay, now that there's no LeBron here, now we'll be good?
It's reality.
It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. It's reality.
It's reality. That dude,
excuse is like, if there was something flawed with the Raptors, there was something maybe great about the other guy.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, even if LeBron was still here, do you think that we would have been taken more seriously now that DeMar is gone and we got Kawhi here?
They would be seen as the second best team in the Eastern Conference and be trapped behind LeBron James' team.
Okay, fair enough.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I agree. I just think that when I look at... When I look at the playoffs, you need another gear. It's like, you know, running the marathon, and the pack is running, and they get to the 18-mile mark, and then the dude that is going to win says, okay, you guys, we've run 18 miles. You ready to run now? And he steps on the gas, and the other guys that have run 18 miles and got nothing left go, oh, that's it. And that's what LeBron does. LeBron, he didn't need home court. He won a game seven in Boston. And they were down 3-2 after getting smashed at home to Indiana and won 6-7. Like, he has another gear and the ability to make his team better that not many people have. We didn't have it in Toronto last year. Boston potentially had it, but Kyrie Irving was hurt. And look at what they did on their home court. Game seven.
I understand what you're saying. I understand in terms of what mainstream media down south say about the Raptors, you know. It's because of the expectation that they should be able to do better, but it's LeBron James. So they can't negate the fact that that dude was blocking everybody in the Eastern Conference. Having said that, part of the reason why Kawhi Leonard is here is because he's supposed to help this team get over that hump. It's different now without LeBron here. Now the battle is a completely different battle. But I don't think that same perception is on the Raptors south of the border.
No.
Because, not because of the Raptors, though. Because that dude has gone to L.A. So it doesn't matter what the Raptors did. It was all about one guy who was preventing everybody from getting out of the Eastern Conference. Now he's not there. It's an open market, and I think Kawhi Leonard was brought here to be that difference to get them over the hump.
I'm going to throw this out there because I've said it a couple times on the radio and written a couple times that what if last year Fred VanVleet's shot at the end of game one against Cleveland goes in?
Or the other two tips.
Or the three tips.
Three tips.
So what happens if the Raptors are up 1-0 in that series instead of down 1-0 in that series? It's a different game.
The same thing.
Maybe, Ashley, is that you, Ash?
It sure is.
Maybe in six or seven games, not four.
But that's what people do, though.
They don't get swept.
Yeah. Maybe in six or seven games.
Well, and that's why the perception is the way it is, right? Because of the way they went out.
Well, look at game one of the NBA Finals.
Everybody lost.
J.R. Smith loses his mind, and Cleveland loses game one. They get swept. I bet you if they win game one on the road in Oakland, they may not win the series, but it's not a sweep.
There are probably three shots in Raptor history that I've been around where the what ifs are. What if Fred's shot goes in? What if Vince's shot goes in at the end of game seven? And what if D. Brown makes a corner three in the first playoff series against the Knicks in game two?
Yeah.
The entire concept of the Raptors changes with any of those shots going in. And the Van Vliet shot was followed by two tips at the rim by seven-footers that didn't go in that would have ended the game and erased all the pressure off the Raptors.
Here's your stat. It was the second time...
Blake, you still here?
No. It was the second time in NBA history that a team did not lead in regulation in a playoff game and won the game. That's it. It's happened two times, and you saw one of them, folks.
Wow, way to go. Lucky you.
Congrats. Yeah.
Lucky you. Hey.
History.
Feel
history.
Good about yourselves.
Go outside. The comet's coming by.
We're back at the bar with Alex. He has a question.
So you talked earlier about the Sixers somewhere in that fourth, fifth, and maybe the Bucks in second, third. How much, and I mean, if it was the beginning of the season, everyone had the Sixers up there with the Celtics. How much of that is...
Not everyone.
Not everyone, but how much of that is not just Coach Bud, but having guys like Ilyasova and Bellinelli now on other teams, now Ilyasova with Milwaukee, filling up the stats wherever you need him to, and that's the job that he does.
Yeah.
That's the difference, even with Jimmy Butler coming after that.
That was, I think, the most understated losses of the Eastern Conference rosters in the summer were Ilyasova and Bellinelli because they were what you want in the NBA. NBA veterans who are shooters and were depth guys. And the Sixers don't have basically any depth anymore. You know, Butler's addition helps out, I guess, a little bit, but they lost two starters to get him. And I think Ilyasova and Bellinelli's losses were huge. And that's why I've always thought Philly was the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference from before the season started, because they don't have that shooting you need in this man's NBA and the depth you got to have to get through 82 games to win 50 games.
Elton Brand, their new GM, told me when he came to Toronto, I said, hey, man, you lose Belly and Ilyasova. He said they were handed, those teams, Milwaukee and San Antonio, came to those guys right away with long-term deals. And you remember at the time, there was lots of stuff going on in Philly. They were still trying to figure it out. And those two guys signed long-term deals right away. And then with the Jimmy Butler trade, I mean, it's good for Philly, but they also gave up a couple guys who, I mean, Šarić was starting to shoot the ball, and Covington is, you know, he's a 3-and-D guy. So, I mean, they're better with Butler, but to Doug's point about the depth, it was like, you know, a two-for-one trade.
And it's why Milwaukee's pretty much better, because Ilyasova gives them something they didn't have.
Yeah, I really like Ilyasova. And it's kind of like what happened with Kawhi Leonard and the trade coming to Toronto. Nobody really talked about Danny Green. Nobody talked about how good he could be for this organization. And he comes in, and he's fit in perfectly as a 3-and-D guy and a little bit more with a winning mentality. So those kind of guys I really like, because they're not the difference maker when at the end of the game, but they're the difference maker through the chunks of the game that you need them to make plays.
Smitty, we were in Miami, that first championship that Miami stole from San Antonio. And after the first three games, everybody, who's the MVP? All the votes were going to go to Danny Green. Yeah.
Made every shot he looked at for a week.
Yeah.
And was... you know, a very valuable player.
Yeah.
Got another question? Okay, Omar, you're up.
You're still here, Ashley.
Hey,
Doug, don't start, okay?
Hey, Omar, from Canada, Reddit Basketball. So my question was,
after seeing what happened between Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler, I was wondering, like, about the perception that Canadian players are soft. Is that just an Andrew Wiggins thing, or, like, do you think that's, like, you know, something that people see in a lot of Canadian NBA players?
I think it's an individual thing. I don't think they clump all Canadian players as soft. I mean, it would be ridiculous to make that assertion, I feel. And Andrew Wiggins, I mean, I don't think he's soft. I just don't think he's the alpha dog that people thought he would be or want him to be. Yeah, so I don't think it's a softness thing. Now Jimmy Butler is a rugged, tough dude, and obviously Andrew had issues with that, but to me, Andrew is not a soft player. He's just not what everybody expected him to be, and that is a label that's going to ride with him his whole career.
Yeah, I absolutely don't think it's a Canadian thing at all, and that's, I don't know, where I'm not sure where that perception would ever come from, because it's just not true. I don't think Jamal Murray is not soft.
Absolutely not.
And any question about it. And I think the Andrew Wiggins question about his desire to be a good player existed before he went to Kansas. And his 1 year at school, even, you wondered how mentally tough and engaged he was. And it's an individualistic guy. Every guy is different. And I don't think it was probably easy to be Jimmy Butler's teammate.
No.
So there's that factors into it as well. Like, it's like, I don't think anybody could be LeBron's teammate. I think it's hard to be Kyle's teammate, for goodness sakes, because they grind on you. And if you don't have that ruggedness and that alpha dog mentality like Sherm talks about, you're going to cower a little bit. And it's going to cost you in the public perception.
Okay, one more question over here. Go ahead.
Idan. Hi. Based on your comments earlier about EuroLeague and men versus boys, how do you explain that Luka Doncic was not an obvious number one pick, as someone who already proved that he played against men in Europe and actually showed it versus the other candidates?
I would have taken Doncic.
Okay.
I think there's something to be said for playing professional from the time you're 15 years old.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said for a skill set. I would have taken him, and in 5 years, we can have the discussion whether him or Ayton are better.
I think that kid is really good, and I got a chance to watch a lot of his EuroLeague games. He's a special player. He's been playing at a high level for years, and he's performed well. He's dominated at high levels. I think what happens is what's in front of your face and you can see every day, you're a little bit more comfortable with, and Ayton is a guy that they could see every day, they could watch, they could go out and touch him. They didn't have to go across the water to find him. And everybody knew how good Doncic was and is. There's always that sliver of a question, does it translate?
Does it translate, yeah.
Not does it translate, can he be a good player? Does it translate to that type of dominance on this level? Ayton had a couple of things that were NBA ready. He was an NBA athlete, and he could rebound and block shots on an NBA level. Guaranteed, walking in the door. Doncic is playing more of a position where you got to face the basket, you got to attack athletes, and you've got to make plays against guys who are super athletic. So that, as much as it's tested in EuroLeague and that high level of basketball, it's still not the NBA. So there's just that sliver of a question. But to me, watching this kid play, he's as good as there is in this draft. He is a phenomenal player, and he's going to be great for years to come.
I jump on the translate point, Sherm. I think that's what people are a little worried about. And all the guys that come from international ball to the NBA, when you ask them what the biggest difference is, they all talk about the speed. They all talk about the stuff you can't see or you can't teach and you can't practice against unless it's there, the speed, the way guys recover. You know, with the three-point line being further away, how fast guys can get to you on that pass. And to me, I just think it was a little bit, that's pretty good, but we're more comfortable with this. So I think it's a matter of does it translate or not.
But he's really good.
He's a heck of a player, man.
Really good.
Okay.
Got one at the front here, Ash. Gentleman here at the front.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I don't know if you're heading to the back.
I wasn't, but I'm coming to the front now.
So on your way up, you can get
Come back to us.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to ask you about a player I'm kind of hoping for. And he probably doesn't have much of a chance with the Raptors this year because they've got a great roster. But hey, he's got mental toughness, in my opinion. A lot of people know his story, Chris Boucher.
Yeah.
I saw him a couple weeks ago. He drained a three. He threw down a dunk in, like, garbage time. But it was impressed me like the rest of his story. So I'm just wondering, does he have the chance to play in the NBA? Maybe not with the Raps, hopefully. But he's not going to get the minutes this year, obviously. But
He's averaging like 30 and 17. He's killing the G League, I don't know what position he plays in the NBA because he's still really, really skinny. And I don't think even in the new era of fours and stretch fives and that he is physical enough to survive in the NBA. I do think he will be on an NBA roster. I don't think he'll be in an NBA rotation until he grows into his body, and I don't know if he will, because he's a little bit older than most young players. But he's going to make a lot of money playing basketball somewhere in the world, so that's not a bad thing either.
He's already been in the Golden State system, right? So last year Golden State, this year Toronto. A couple of good organizations have identified his talent, and he's a terrific kid too. We had a chance to be around him a little. Hard worker. You know, from what I can see, a pretty good teammate. And I mean, I hope, as Doug said, he's going to make some money. I hope he gets a shot somewhere. But you know, there's no room right now in Toronto. There really isn't.
He's playing ridiculously well. And my only concern with guys like that is that when you score that much on that level, there's no NBA team that needs you to come and score like that. And if that's your calling card and that's what you're doing, it's really tough to go to the best league in the world, to go to a roster on a call-up and say, now I got to go score 32 points. They got guys who can do that. So he's going to have to, while he's dominating in the G League, he's going to have to continue to work on his game that it fits more of a role on the NBA level. Because he's not going to get the volume of shots that he takes to score 32 points or 30 points. He's going to get, if he makes a roster and sticks, if he gets into a rotation, there are going to be specific times he's going to get shots. He's got to make them, and he's got to make multiple other plays, which he can. I mean, he's lively. He can block shots. He's very mobile. But that's where his bread is going to be buttered until he gets the freedom to shoot the ball. But it's great that he's dominating the G League like that in terms of scoring, but you're not going to come to the Raptors and be asked to score 30 points.
I can tell you this much. Nick Nurse really likes him.
Absolutely. They love his work.
And this year at Summer League, I think it was the game against Charlotte. He was out there. I think he blocked like six. They won the game. He blocked like six or seven shots, a couple of them from their first-round pick, Bridges. I mean, this kid's a tank. He's coming in for a dunk, and Boucher stopped him. And it was interesting to hear the kind of off-the-cuff remarks after. Nick Nurse did his media availability, and the mics and notepads and tape recorders went away, and he turned to all of us there. He goes, Boucher was pretty good, wasn't he? And just something like that. Like, he's impressed the coaches, and I think that's what led to him kind of being where he is and, you know, sticking right here with Toronto and maybe having a shot.
And listen, it's better to score 30 points per game in G League than do what Bruno and Lucas did and be like just okay.
Ashley, you got to let that go, man.
It's true. I'm sorry. When you're an NBA player and you go down there, who dominated? Norman dominated. Fred VanVleet dominated. Pascal dominated when they were there.
Those guys did nothing to you, Ashley.
Lucas was like the G League Finals MVP.
No, he wasn't.
Bruno was. One of them two was.
Pascal was, I thought.
Yeah, they won the championship.
Bruno was, but honestly, he was super inconsistent. I was there the first year. He was super inconsistent.
Sounds personal.
Although I did tell this story before. One time Lucas told me my ankles were ashy.
Here we go. I knew it.
That's Lucas working the
audio board. Yeah, that was interesting. I'm so sorry. I know a few of you guys had questions. We don't have time for it, but maybe you can catch these guys on their way out. Thank you so much for coming. It's so nice, obviously, to talk hoops in the city that's dominated a lot of the news cycle by a certain NHL team. So there's a lot to be excited about with this Raptors team. And I must just say, just a warning, don't worry about where Kawhi is going to be next year. Just enjoy him being here this year. That's the best advice I can give you. Okay, you guys? Thank you so much for coming. Have a good night.